Today is July 15th, 1973. We're in Fairbanks, Alaska. We attempted to attend the dedication ceremonies that the Alaska Railroad conducted for the new spur line from the existing Fairbanks-Eielson line over to the Fairbanks International Airport. It was scheduled for 8:30 a.m. Sunday, July 15th. At the depot in Fairbanks. At that time, it was just raining cats and dogs, pouring. So the visitors who normally would be standing outside listening to this program were either in the train waiting to go to Nenana, or they stayed home, or they sat outside in their car. I couldn't get in. It was too crowded. Tom Jensen of radio station KFRB was kind enough to lend me his cassette recording of that program, as well as his recording of the program, the oral program, that is, at the driving of the spike north end of the bridge in Nenana later in the day. And I'll play Tom Jensen's cassette tape as he recorded it. After the completion of the tape, I'll make some comments on the people who are named, just to clarify who they are, who was on the platform, etc.
Completion of the project. So the subgrade and the ballast that was brought in by these people, each one doing their share. The Army doing the first portion, Ray Hoy doing another part, Metro Consortium doing the next section, and the state, through the Division of Aviation and Department of Highways, completing the subgrade. And when this was done, then the Alaska Railroad put the ties, rails, and ballast on top of it and completed the project. So Fairbanks now has a rail access to the airport. As I say, we have a true intermodal transportation train to plane to the North Slope. So we would like to show our appreciation for the fine cooperation that we received in connection with the project. Therefore, I would like to present first to the Mayor of Fairbanks, Mayor Gillum, a plaque showing our appreciation for a job well done. Mayor, it's a great pleasure that we can present you with this plaque for your part in helping us get this spur.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to, of course, on behalf of the City of Fairbanks, we're very pleased to accept this. I would like to hope that this is just the start of a large construction program for the Alaska Railroad. It's been studied many, many times, either connections into Canada or going further north. We think it's time for a little action. We hope that this is the beginning. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We have also a plaque for the borough, and Mayor John Carlson, would you please come forward? We'd like to show our special appreciation for your part in helping us put this project over. Thank you again.
Thank you, Walker. It's an honor for me to accept this on behalf of the citizens of North Star Borough and the many that really worked on that spur. I think there'll probably be a lot of pleasant memories on that. It's like Bobby Mitchell, and he really came around the office many times to encourage me to work on it. And it is a project that was a community project between the military, the federal government, the state, and the borough. Thank you.
We have also a plaque showing our appreciation to the state of Alaska, and I regret very happily that the governor cannot be here today, because he is doing a job for Alaska. He's trying to get the pipeline on the right route and make sure
thank you very much on behalf of my husband and all of the people of Alaska, and congratulate you on this fine example of cooperation of government at all levels.
Thank you. And we have one for General Geddes, too, on the behalf of the Alaska Railroad, for the participation that the Army played in getting us started. They had the first section right off of our spur train.
Well, we're always glad to be first, but on behalf of the people who really did the work, I thank you very much for the certificate, and it will take a place in our hierarchy. Thank you very much. Then we'll conclude our first portion of the trip. So if you will, please board the train. We have the train, as you know, designated into two sections. A portion of the train will be returning to Fairbanks at the completion of the ceremonies at Nenana. The other portion of the train will be attached to the regular train, continuing southbound then into Anchorage after we're through at Nenana. So we thank you very much.
Walker, if I might, just one minute. Ladies and gentlemen, it's always proper to, if I might, have your attention for just a second.
Have your attention, please.
It's always proper to acknowledge the ranking people in the community. And I'd like to acknowledge today in the audience the presence of the Queen Regent of our golden days, Mrs. Lena Phipps. And she'll be joining us. The king regent of the golden days. Since he's king, his wishes are our command, and he's decided to go fishing. But Lena is going to come to us.
Next on this tape, you'll hear Tom Jensen interviewing former governor and former secretary of interior Walter J. Hickel. They were aboard the train headed for Nenana when this interview was made.
Well, let's see. This is on tape, by the way, and we'll be using this probably on a newscast later this evening and then tomorrow in Fairbanks on radio and TV. I'm interested in your opinions concerning, what do you think is the indication is now that the United States Senate has defeated the bill which would have allowed the Canadian study? Do you think this indicates anything in relation to the vote coming up on Tuesday as far as Senate opinion?
I think this. There's a strong support, and I say nearly an overwhelming support, for the Jackson Bill. The Jackson Bill basically takes care of the problem for the whole United States, including Alaska, in the Mineral Leasing Act of 1921. In my travels around the country over the past several months, which I take 1 week a month, the support for the Alaska pipeline is growing. I predict that the Jackson Bill, with the Stevens-Gravel Amendment, might pass. We'll be much closer. But on the plus side of the whole thing, I'm convinced that the Young Melchner bill that's in the House with specifically authorized construction has an excellent chance, and I would predict its passage. And if the Jackson bill just goes through without amendment, then it'll go to conference committee. And it's in conference committee that the solution will be worked out, in my opinion, that will authorize the construction of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. I think that's the realism of the thing. If the Gravel-Stevens bill passes, then it'll be a foregone conclusion if we can start much earlier. There's some doubts whether that's the best way to go on account of Jackson was the father and the author of the Environmental Protection Act. And so, well, let's have to wait a minute. He's in the middle. And I thought the strategy was the best, where the Senate would amend the Mineral Leasing Act, the House would do what they're doing, and then in the conference committee they could specifically agree on the construction of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, in essence, without amending the Environmental Protection Act.
Now, you know, we've noticed that the congressmen that have come to Alaska, recently Don Young has brought several to Alaska, many of them have been swayed once they've actually seen the situation, been here in the state, and have had a better look, a first-hand look at the situation here. You have been traveling around the United States talking to people all over our nation. Have you found this to be true also? Once they are informed, it changes their opinion?
Absolutely. From even the very, what I call emotional areas, like the University of Colorado, for an example, Boulder, very strong conservation group. We had about 900 there one evening, about a month ago. And after you explain the situation, the vastness of the country, and the constitutional right of any state to make a living, it becomes a very real thing. And so it is one of constantly informing. People that are not informed about anything sort of have a fear of it. And so it is that situation of education. The pipeline will be built. It's been delayed somewhat for a number of years, and many of the questions that were raised in 69 and 70 by the environmentalists were good questions. Those and had to be answered, because industry nor government nor the scientific community really had the answer. They have those answers now. And so this is the finest kind of progress. And so it will happen. In fact, it will be a milestone for things like this all over the nation.
Have you got any comments? I'm just coming from nowhere with this. Yes. About your political future?
I don't. The only comments I have are the same ones I've had for a long time. I've thought about the situation in 74. I have not made a decision for the simple fact I do not know what's right. I may not do anything, and that is an option. But I think that by the end of the year or sometime, things will clear up. I do think that the direction that the Trans-Alaska Pipeline goes could affect the decision of what I might do if I do anything. So I'm not evading your question. If I had the answer to what I might do in 74, I would tell you.
The next recording you hear on the cassette tape that we're transcribing from is the driving of the spike ceremony, north end of the bridge, a railroad bridge, that is, in Nenana.
Living in Nenana in 1923, and she was in one of the pictures
in the arms of President Harding. She at that time was a baby. Mrs. Arthur Holbrook, who was here, traveling from Wasilla with her husband and Mrs. and Mrs. Walter Thielen. She lives in Indiana in 1923. As I understood, she was on the bank as we are here today watching the original driving of the Golden Spike. Mrs. Arthur Holbrook. Mr. Waller Thielen was here with his wife. He was also a child at the time in Indiana, and he participated in events with his sister, who was also well known, along with his wife, as the owners and operators for about 25 years of the Thielen Grocery in Wasilla. They have sold a store as of last November and are now building a new home on Lake Lucille. Jesse Anderson who was here at the time, she also had the honor or privilege, anyway a distinct pleasure to babysit for some of the gentlemen who are in the audience today, notably Colonel Coghill, Bill Coghill. We also have Mrs. Bernadine Prince with us today, who's living in Tacoma, Washington. And as you perhaps all know, she wrote a two-volume history of the Alaska Railroad and at the present time is planning her third book. And she was the secretary, the assistant to the general manager some years ago. Mrs. Bernadine Prince. Thank you. We also have a Mr. and Mrs. Bert Winterstrom, and he was employed by the Alaska Railroad in 1920 and was with us for many years, and he retired as chief of the accounting branch of the Alaska Railroad, Mr. Bert and his and Mrs. Winterstrom. Governor Samuelson, who has the... being the representative of the Secretary of Transportation, would like to say a few words. It's with great pleasure that I introduce to you at this time Don Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Ingram. Governor Hickel. Mrs. Hickel. General Getty, General Sherrill, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to be here with you today in this picturesque setting. Very pleased that it quit raining. And I want you to know that the Secretary of Transportation, Claude S. Brenniger, sends his regrets and asks me to convey to you his best regards and congratulations on this momentous occasion and his best wishes for the future. I look forward to each of my trips to Alaska, not only because the Department of Transportation is so well represented here, but because I think you have a great state and with an unlimited future. As you know, the FAA, Coast Guard, and the Federal Highway Administration are located throughout the state, and although the Alaska Railroad does not stretch from border to border, her impact upon the economy and mobility is nonetheless very evident. The Alaska Railroad is certainly important to the state in terms of an effective transportation system, and it provides an excellent transportation service. In the past couple of years, there has been a regeneration of interest in rail service, both passenger and freight, as the public has come to recognize the need for a system capable of providing a vibrant, flexible, and reliable transportation service. Through throughout the history of our growing nation, rails have been literally the king of the road. And there are a number of strong forces at work to guarantee a continued viability of our rail transportation system. The railroad has railroads have been a mainstay in our economy and has the support of the farmer, miner, manufacturer, and supplier, all of whom depend upon the railroad. The rail industry has another loyal defender in the Department of Transportation and in the person of our Secretary, Claude S. Brenniger. Transportation challenges that confront this great state will not be solved easily or quickly. We in the Department of Transportation look forward to an active friendship in the continuing development of Alaska's truly multimodal transportation system. We are very proud of the Alaska Railroad's contribution to that system, and we look to the Alaskan Railroad with great expectation for the future. I am sure that by all working together, we will not be disappointed. Thank you for inviting me to join you here today.
No gathering of this type would be complete without a few words from Governor Hickel, who perhaps has as much interest in the Alaska Railroad as anyone that I know. Governor Hickel. Ms. Vegan, members of the military, distinguished guests. I know of no act that the United States government ever did as a development project than the Railway Act of 1912. It was a simple act, fought for it by the late Judge Wickersham. That act says that it shall authorize the President of the United States to construct not over 1,000 miles of railroad, and its primary purpose is to open up the country. Well, I think the reason for that act of 1912 is just appropriate today, and here we are 50 years later with the project just half completed. Now, I don't think we're going to wait another 50 years to complete that act of 1912. I look forward to the day when Fairbanks is not the normal north terminal, but the southern terminal for the northern expansion. So it's indeed a pleasure for me to be here today and to help commemorate this great event. But all I look forward to is just completing the project. Thank you. If you will look to the bridge, you will find one of the better and one of the largest structures of its type in the world. It is the second largest truss of its type. We have with us today Mrs. Flora Seibold, and her father was the designer and the builder of this bridge. Mrs. Seibold. Timing?
Nourishing the fledgling territory and helping convert it to our 49th state.
I understand the day that President Harding drove the original gold spike was about 90 degrees. The sun was pouring down, but I've been told that several very official proclamations were issued about a half hour ago to the effect that it shall not rain anymore right here, and I'm delighted that that came to pass. The driving of the original golden spike on that July 15th, 50 years ago, marked the beginning of orderly service on this 483-mile-long route, made up of several privately built railroads which have not been able to withstand the rigors of the weather on the one hand and the economic paucity on the other. But Alaska has come an awful long way since then. Today, you have a growing population, a growing economy, and I think that the state can be exceedingly proud of its accomplishments. It was probably a very hardy group of pioneers, those few thousand people who comprised the total population of Alaska in 1923, who laid the foundations for today's success. This rugged and really spectacularly beautiful country has always presented the greatest challenges to man's ingenuity, resourcefulness, and plain stamina, and I think it continues to do so today. Alaska's vast, remote regions, its Arctic areas, the ragged Brooks Range, and the towns and cities which grew up under and against unbelievable odds, still demand the best of the hardy people who call Alaska their home. And their performance is superb. And that certainly goes for the people on the Alaska Railroad. Just this past year, we've seen another example of the determination and far-sightedness of the people in the Fairbanks area when they built that spur line out to the Fairbanks Airport. That 10-mile spur, which we dedicated today a little earlier, figuratively stands as a monument to the cooperation that's possible between federal, state, local government, and the people themselves. The complete cooperation between all the various segments of government and industry, I'm sure it comes to no surprise to you. Alaska's intrepid pioneers, whether they mine chunks of gold way back when or whether they're ready to tap the liquid gold of today to satisfy mankind's seemingly insatiable appetite for energy, well, the railroad was and is their link to the outside world, and in many cases, the only reliable and secure link. And just as the illustrious history of Alaska is inescapably entwined with the pioneering of the Alaska Railroad, whose builders hacked their way through the wilderness and overcame tremendous odds, the future of the state cannot be separated from the future of the railroad, a railroad that today and then is essential to the realization of the hopes and aspirations of the people who are still pioneering in this new estate. So today, let's rededicate the Alaska Railroad, not as a reminder of the past so much as a rededication to the future and the potential the Alaska Railroad holds for helping in the development of this great land. And now if someone will show me where the hole is. Chair who worked on the Alaska Railroad from 1917 to 1942. And since he has driven many, many spikes, I think it may be appropriate that Sam Chamis should hand you this bike so that you can drive. Sam?
The master of ceremonies for this program today is the manager of the Alaska Railroad, Walker S. Johnson, W-A-L-K-E-R-S Johnson. The elderly gentleman who helped and was introduced is Sam Chamis. His name is spelled C-H-A-I-M-U-S, worked for the railroad from 1917 to 1942. And Mrs. Flora Siebold, Walker Johnson pronounced it Siebold, but it's pronounced Siebold, is the daughter of Donald MacDonald, the designer of the railroad bridge there at Nenana. According to material that the railroad sent to me, Mr. Chamis's name is spelled C-H-I-A-M-I-S rather than the spelling I gave earlier. His first name is S, as in Sam, S-O-T-E-R. He was born in Greece, naturalized in Fairbanks, Alaska, 1926. And he began employment with the railroad in 1917, worked intermittently for the Alaska Road Commission and the railroad. He was a section foreman when last employed on November 28, 1942, and he was working for the railroad at the time of the original Golden Spike ceremony. The colonel, Bill Coghill, whom Walker Johnson referred to during the program, is Bill Coghill, brother of Jack and Bob Coghill of Nenana. He's a career Air Force man stationed at Elmendorf, I think it's Elmendorf, at any rate in Anchorage, and is close to retirement. Bill was not in Nenana at the time of the driving of the Golden Spike. I spoke with his mother, Mrs. Coghill, who's 77 years old now, going on 78. She is from England. Her husband was from England, and she was expecting Bill at the time and had returned to England, where he was born. Mrs. Coghill and her son Bill then missed the July 15, 1923 ceremony. Bill Coghill, Colonel Bill Coghill, was present today in Nenana for these ceremonies. I might add that Bob Coghill and his wife were present, as well as Jack Coghill. I'm not sure of their age, but I think Bob and Jack Coghill are younger than Bill. Therefore, they missed the Golden Spike ceremony, too. Sorry about that, Jack.